Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
And now it's time to check in with WNYC planning editor Kate Hines. She'll fill us in on what reporters are covering in the newsroom. We call it Kate Has a Plan because Kate always has a plan. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Allison.
So it's a historic day. The subway shutdown happened. Now, this cleaning, about for cleaning, right? This must be a safety measure. The New York Times in their coverage today stated that 109 transit workers had lost their lives. So
right.
How did the newsroom cover this momentous event?
Well, we sent two reporters and a photographer out last night, and they either biked around in one case or drove in another to see what was happening. It was Stephen Nesson, who is the newsroom's transit reporter, and Jake Offenhartz, and they basically spent hours watching the police and transit workers do their job. And Stephen said early on, you know, he went to the Coney Island station around midnight and said that there were dozens and dozens of police officers already on the platform preparing to move people off of the trains. And he witnessed, you know, several encounters where homeless people were told to leave. He didn't see so many outreach workers, which isn't a huge surprise because there's just not that many of them working in the mm-hmm. system. But there were something like 1,000 police officers out, hundreds of workers for the MTA on hand to clean. And we're trying to figure out, you know, who was doing the cleaning. I think in some cases they were contract employees from an outside firm, not transit employees, which is interesting and something that we will be following up on. Stephen, you know, I asked Stephen to pay special attention to what the cleaning procedures were, and what he saw were basically just like, you know, workers in hazmat suits spraying stuff on the train surfaces and wiping them down with a paper towel. We had been promised much more high-tech cleaning techniques, like ultraviolet lights, mm-hmm. and which I think probably are not happening in stations. You know, maybe they have to pull them trains to rail yards to do some of this, but, you know, last night was just day one, so there's more to come on that. One of the other things we were very interested and will be following up on is what happened to the homeless people who were removed from the system. There aren't hugely accurate numbers of, you know, homeless people in the subway system at any given moment, but there's something like, you know, there are rough estimates of about 2,000, and that number gets argued over a lot. But let's say hundreds of people, you know, basically reside in the subway system on a regular basis. And the city said that they engaged with 252 of them in the overnight hours and 139 of them who were moved to shelters or safe havens, which the mayor called a huge success this morning. You know, in a press conference, he said, "We've never seen this high percentage of people living on the streets agree to something different." So, you know, that's still a small fraction of the number of people who are in the subway system. So we'll be following up on what happened to those that just relocated temporarily, as well as those that went into, you know, the city's homeless shelter system.
And can we clarify something? It's a small thing, but it's been causing a lot of back and forth on Twitter. The way some headlines have been written, it's written like the subway has not been cleaned in 115 years. That's not the case, right? It's that the subway has not been shut down in 115 years.
Yes, the subway has been cleaned since it opened, and subway cars have been cleaned. They just haven't been cleaned this regularly. No, for us, the huge thing was that this shutdown from 1 to 5 in the overnight hours, you know, the subway system has never been shut down before. It gets shut down temporarily on a handful of occasions for big snowstorms or Hurricane Sandy. But certain lines have been taken out of service for what the MTA calls fast track, where it does major repairs to the system overnight. But a blanket shutdown of the system for 4 hours with an indefinite end is something that has never happened before. And I think really hard for a lot of New Yorkers who,
mm-hmm. of course,
who, you know, thousands of people do ride the system overnight. But it's also just, you know, that's something that we think about. New York is the city that never sleeps. We have an operational subway. You know, the MTA and the mayor are both vowing that this is temporary. This is something that will not, you know, it will not be permanent. We will do this as long as the pandemic continues, and then we will go back to 24/7 service. But I, you know, I sort of am wondering, are they really? You know, the MTA mm-hmm. is facing an enormous budget deficit. Is this going to be a way to cut costs? But that's just, you know, something I'm wondering. I have no reporting to back that up at all.
Well, there will be reporting done on it, I'm sure. So Monday,
oh, yes.
on the show, we did a whole segment about the June 23rd presidential primary cancellations. And we had a lot of calls in, a lot of callers were not comfortable with it. What is the update?
Well, a judge ruled yesterday, that a federal judge ruled yesterday that the primary must take place on June 23rd because canceling it would be unconstitutional. This has been like a bit of whiplash because remember the primary was originally mm-hmm. supposed to be in April, then it was in June, and as you said, it was canceled, and now it's back on. It's not clear. You know, the State Board of Elections said yesterday it was going to file an appeal. I'm not sure it has filed that appeal yet. So I don't think we've heard the last of it, but as of now, you know, the state, in accordance with the judge's ruling, is preparing to hold a primary on June 23rd. For people that live in New York City, this, you know, it always kind of surprised me that it was canceled in the first place because we are already having special elections on that mm-hmm. date for a number of candidates. But something like one-third of counties in New York were not going to have an election in the absence of the presidential primary. And so the State Board of Elections was looking to save money and also, you know, theoretically people's lives by saying we don't want election workers or the public out congregating in public places. In his briefing this morning, Governor Cuomo's aide said that the state was looking into involving the National Guard in preparing mail-in ballots. You know, this is something like the state is now, which has never really had a huge mail-in ballot operation. That's something that mm-hmm. has traditionally been very difficult to do in New York, and only in recent years has it become loosened up. Now the state is going to prepare for a massive voter mail-in operation, which is, you know, will be really interesting to see how that's going to happen. Our reporter, Bridget Bergen, will be following that closely. I should mention she's going to be on a local All Things Considered today talking about the latest on this, so I urge people to tune in and give it a listen.
And, of course, the ongoing coverage of COVID. Where are you now in terms of what you think is important and what questions still need answering?
Well, we have a million trillion questions. You know, there are a couple of investigations pending in both New York and New Jersey into nursing homes. Earlier this week, the state revised upward pretty dramatically the number of people in nursing homes that had died from COVID. The state had taken a lot of hits from the public over what was perceived to be a lack of transparency in reporting nursing home deaths. The state would not reveal the names of nursing homes that had deaths if they had something like fewer than 5 COVID cases, and then, you know, sort of under relentless public pressure, they caved. And it now turns out that the additional nursing home deaths mean that about 25% of all COVID fatalities in New York State, which are approaching 20,000, happened in nursing homes. And a lot of those nursing homes had been cited by federal regulators in the past for failure to adhere to federal guidelines. So both the attorneys general in New York and New Jersey are going to be looking into that. Also earlier this week, Governor Cuomo laid out, he said they're not metrics. I think they are metrics, but on what regions can open in New York when? And there seem to be, you know, a number of things of which the New York City region only adheres to like 3 of the 7 right now. But it's like you have to have, in order to begin thinking about reopening, regions must have at least 14 days of a decline in total hospitalizations and deaths. You can't exceed a certain percentage of new cases. You have to have your hospital beds. You have to have something like 30% of hospital beds available. You have to have a PPE stockpile. Mm. And then you have to have a certain amount of contact tracers, which I think is going to be a big stumbling block for a lot of regions. So, you know, we're looking ahead to reopening and seeing how that's going to happen. We're also very interested in education. and what's going to happen with, you know, not just public schools, but the city university system in the fall. Governor Cuomo kind of dropped a bomb yesterday when he said the Gates Foundation was going to be involved in helping to, quote-unquote, reimagine New York's school, you know, approach to education using technology. And saying the Gates Foundation to a certain percentage of people in New York is like a trigger warning word, because that, of course, they, of course, were the people behind Common Core and teacher standards, which were so contentious in New York. So we're going to be following that very closely.
WNYC Planning Editor Kate Hines. Kate, thanks for joining, as always.
Thank you, Allison.